This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. We're on the verge of celebrating our 63rd year of independence, and this year was supposed to be a unique one since it's the year 2020. The year Wawasan 2020 of Vision 2020 was supposed to come to fruition. Politically, the aims of that narrative have now been postponed to 2025, but it's still worth exploring the spirit of this vision that was first conceptualized in 1991, despite the reality of the year being pretty challenging so far. So in thinking about the year 2020, I can't help but think of the visualization of the year, especially by children in the 90s, when they were asked what 2020 will look like years down the road. In these drawings, whether on drawing blocks or murals, you can typically see a city, which you can assume to be our capital, depicted in a very modern and almost futuristic manner. Tall buildings or skyscrapers occupy the Malaysian sky, along with flying cars zooming by on the sides of some of these buildings. Look a bit lower and you will then see elevated railways passing by in between the buildings, completing that modern image of the year 2020. Of course, fast forward to now, cars are still firmly grounded on our roads and highways, but we do have skyscrapers propping up majestically here in KL, together with those elevated rail lines and railways. Rail lines that are now known as LRT, monorail and MRT here in the country, with various lines connecting people to the city. Somehow, while elevated railways are seen to be a practical design to accommodate light rail transit in a dense city, the visualization of it in these drawings makes me think about how that came to be and its role in a quote-unquote modern city.
My name is Azif Azuddin. I'm a researcher at the Centre, which is basically a think tank that does ground-up people policy research. A lot of my research focuses on public transportation and the commuter engagement and commuter experience.
Azif Azuddin is here to help me contextualize the history of the LRT, considering that it's the country's first light rail transit. But first, he's going to indulge me in my thoughts about why we are somehow fascinated with LRTs in relation to the concept of a modern city.
I don't think it's just LRTs in general. Right? Yeah, specifically, I think it's the railways. When we think of modernity and how, what are the markers of it, right? What signals do you send to external parties or yourself that you've kind of achieved the state of modernity? And I think railways are a very, very prominent, if not a way you can show, apart from skyscrapers, that, hey, we are a developed city. We are a connected city as well at that. Because if you think about the fundamental point of a railway system, it's connecting point A to point B. People that live outside town to the city, which is the center of social and economic life. And sometimes in the case of Kuala Lumpur, the very representation of Malaysia's economic and social health as well. What is the most trendiest thing that's happening? What are the political shifts and social shifts that are happening? You looked at towards Kuala Lumpur for that. Now, to address what you were saying, right, the interesting part is that when you're talking about the representations of how Wawasan 2020 will look like, right, a lot of documents, I would say documents, lah, but actually just paintings and drawings of children of the time, ours included. I mean, it happened around our year.
Yeah.
A lot of the drawings around 1997 to 1999, presented Kuala Lumpur as how we would see in 2020. And thematically, what you see in these pictures are, yes, like you said, you have skyscrapers. Some of them had the MISAT satellite, and we know that because we see the MISAT satellite going to space, projecting our communications and entertainment lines via Astro. We saw that as Malaysia in space. But what we also had, however, like you said, was a rail line. Now, if you look at maybe artistic representations elsewhere, right? So in the, I think, there's 19th and 20th century Italian-Russian futurism avant-garde had this whole anarcho-socialist presentation of how the train is very representative in socialist life, in a life that is very people-driven. And the train symbolism has three things. The train represented connectivity, it represented the collective drive of society, and it represented electricity as the marker of a modern society. Which is interesting, right? Because if you think of the train, in any form of mobility, a car can only bring 1 to 2 people, at most 4 if you want to pack it up. the bus, maybe up to 50, 60 people, but the train can transport hundreds and thousands of people in a short span of time from one place to another. Right? So I think you see this sort of bold, vivid style being replicated in the drawings of children. And I think because of the bold colours used, the flying car obviously is not scientifically and technologically possible at this point of time, but the train is. The train was the one thing that we knew and we were familiar with, because even during the British colonial period, we had trains for different reasons, obviously. Back then, for the British, it was to transport and to be used for economic goods. Transporting people as a commuting option was secondary. What the British wanted was to transport all from KL to Port Klang. And the steam engine of its time was seen as the technological peak, right? The steam engine was seen as the driver for society, modernity, industrial age. Now it's electricity. And so I guess over time, we still link, however, trains and railway systems to the market of what modernity is. It's still an economic driver. It's still a social driver, which is why in the 1990s, when trains were proposed to be built in Kuala Lumpur, the public received it very well, and the government sold it as, one, a solution to congestion issues, but also, two, as a way to increase the Malaysian quality of life. And also, it was to prove a point that, hey, this is Malaysia's foray into the modern world by building a rail line that connected the city, the heart of the city, to the surrounding suburban areas.
Okay, that's interesting. Can you like explain a bit about the history of our rail lines in KL prior to the development of LRT?
So for clarification, the KTM commuter was actually established in 1995. That's just a year before the LRT system came up. Mm. Prior to that point, the rail lines that existed to and from Kuala Lumpur were used mainly for economic purposes. So I think a very good visual example is that if you drive from Kuala Lumpur all the way down to Port Klang and you drive along the Federal Highway, you would notice that the existing KTM commuter lines actually pass through areas which are generally industrial. Think of Petaling Jaya, where it passes through areas in Petaling Jaya that is alongside industrial areas. Even if you go into Shah Alam, the railway line is beside factorial areas as well, all the way down to Port Klang. So that is the legacy of the British railway system that they left behind for us. And it's part of the larger network throughout the entire peninsula, yeah? But the fact that it's built along industrial areas is, I think, emblematic of what its first and foremost primary use was. It was to transport cargo from factories. It was to transport economic goods to the ports. Because back then, that's how, before we flew things about, before we had high-speed rails and everything, railways were how we transported economic goods. Mm. In 1995, then, the KTM commuter was opened. That existing railway line that we talked about earlier was converted to be used for commuter use. Of course, once in a while, occasionally, we can also see cargo transportation on those same lines as well. So that KTM line shares both economic/industrial and social use. Mm. So with the LRT was part of the 1981 Transport Master Plan. Yeah? And in this study, there were a few things that the Malaysian government wanted to solve. They wanted to manage the congestion in Kuala Lumpur. They wanted to improve public transport because at that time, we were solely reliant on buses. So if you hear this thing about Bus Mini, right, being the most efficient back then, I wouldn't say it was the most efficient. It was most efficient, I think, because they ran profitable routes along the highway or in higher profit areas. But I cannot say that had the same effect in less outside areas that didn't earn the buses that much money.
Mm. I thought it was a tongue-in-cheek reference, though, Bus Mini being profitable.
It is profitable.
It is profitable.
It was profitable, yeah. Because they ran a fare box model, which was how many people rode a bus in a day, that's how much you get as a profit. But if you make a lot of money running profit routes, what you do is two things. You either subsidize what is the less profitable route. So this is where you reach out into areas macam in maybe Sri Kembangan or in the outreaches of Hulu Langat, where not many people go and take buses, but you serve a social route. Or two, you don't even serve the route at all. So people romanticize Bus Mini a lot. That's my take on it. So what happened from here is that the LRT was touted as part of that master plan. this kind of happened at the backdrop of the 6th Malaysia Plan when the government wanted to finally implement the LRT, right? So there were deals made in place, they met with different companies who will be able to, one, develop the infrastructure, who can operate it, for how long, and what are the mechanisms in place to run the entire thing. So and that's where we saw by 1996, we saw the Star LRT running, right? And which is interesting because while the Star LRT was completed in 1996, the showcasing of the Star LRT was supposed to be for the Commonwealth Games in 1998. Mahathir, I think, gave a speech where he said this, and I quote, "There will be foreign visitors who will be using the public transit system, and what they see will be a reflection of Malaysia as host to the Commonwealth Games." So in the minds of the Malaysian government, or in the minds of Malaysians and how we present ourselves to the world, an existing, working, efficient public transportation system was a marker to the world that we are ready. We are ready to participate in the modern world. And that we also care for people, for our people, right? Because the idea of building the transportation system, the LRT, was to solve congestion issues. That's first and foremost. So if you kind of like drift through the media and headlines of its time in the 1990s, all throughout the 1990s, you would see that the media presented the LRT as a solution to congestion. They presented the LRT as a step forward into modernity. Yeah? And which is interesting because in May 1996, there was the headline, I think, by NST that said 2 hours by road or 15 minutes by LRT. So there was also an economic angle there, like how long do you want to spend in cars? And I remember this, when we were younger, and I remember watching TV, there were a lot of PSAs talking about, hey, you should, why don't you carpool? Right? And I remember that very strongly, where my parents were also part of this entire role of, in order to manage congestion, in order to build community ties, let's all get in the same car, you can fit more people as opposed to one person per car, right? But even with that, it didn't solve any congestion issues, which is why I think at some point the government knew, even as early as the 80s, you need a mass transportation system. We were looking towards places like Japan, Lucky's policy, right? Where Japan's lifeblood, its entire living is made out of the transportation and very efficient railway system. Even in UK, right? Our colonial masters in London had an extensive railway network. So any city that wants to admit itself into the modern world needed a legitimate railway system that functioned to bring people from point A to point B, typically to their workplace. But it's also to serve a social purpose where you can connect people to places where they couldn't have been in the first place.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is that you referred to London just now. And the unique thing about, I think the first couple of our railway lines were the fact that they were elevated railway lines, right? Some of them eventually did go through.
The London Underground is like entirely underground.
So there is that element as well. Why aren't ours solely underground, or why was there like a mix of, you know, elevated and underground?
Right. To be fair, the LRT and the existing MRT system is a mix of underground and elevated. Mm. But I think if you're referring to the LRT system, right, which is the thing, which is what we're talking about now, I'm not an engineer, but the cost of building an underground stations, right, I think there's a question of geology, there's a question of solid infrastructure, because while it looks neat and tidy, while you would barely disturb the roads above, which is solid infrastructure, right, you kind of need that to go around the city. There's a question of, if I bore a huge hole underneath these buildings or along a specific route on the highway or maybe underneath certain places, will this structure stand? Can I build a strong enough foundation so that no mishap can happen in the near future, in 10 years' time, maybe 20, maybe even 50 years? So I think given the financial considerations and the engineering considerations, I think it's much easier to always build an elevated railway line. It doesn't look pretty. To some people, maybe they don't like the look of it because it just ruins the image. Right? And I think this is exemplary in some heritage groups. So I'm in some heritage groups where I see people complaining a lot in places like Masjid Jami, where there's an elevated LRT line, the Star LRT, right? It runs through certain heritage buildings. It runs very close to heritage buildings. And then a lot of people complain, I can't see the very nice building, I can't see the very nice facade because it's covered by the LRT. Mm. So some people might see an elevated design as prohibitive or maybe an obstacle to a very beautiful old building. And Kuala Lumpur is made up of some old, nice heritage buildings. But at the same time, the cost of building an underground railway, I don't have the numbers at hand here, but it would surely be more expensive. Mm. Maybe an engineer would have more solid numbers and more solid factual basis lah for that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting that you brought up the whole visual thing because I think we started the conversation by, I guess, looking at the visual narrative of us in 2020 and how, to some, while I agree that to others it looks visually disruptive to have elevated railways across the city, but to some that is one way or another a sign of progress and development as well, right?
Yeah. So, you can see it for yourself.
Yeah. The word futuristic might be a bit too extreme, but it looks modern in that sense, right? The fact that we have railways, rail lines, I guess, going through in between skyscrapers.
A good public transportation system is a mark of, I think, a city that is ready to accept connectivity and modernism. I think that's pretty much given, right? I mean, you see a lot of rail enthusiasts who go to London, who go to Tokyo. And I'm sorry, I'm only using these 2 points because those two are my, based on experience, those are my reference points. But for me, the ease of traveling with public transportation compared to getting into a car, getting stuck in traffic, needing to find parking, the cost of all those things included, the whole point of building a public transportation system is to provide a more economic solution where you maybe pay. And right now we have the Penjana scheme going on, right, for public transportation where you only pay 13 ringgit a month. Before this, it was 100 ringgit. That is cheap by any comparison compared to taking a car where you may have to pay up to 400 a month, not including maintenance, every other month or so.
That was Azif Azuddin, a researcher with the centre, sharing his thoughts on the light rail transit or the LRT here in our capital city in relation to Vision 2020. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharuddin and you're listening to a Merdeka episode of I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and joining me this week is Azif Azuddin, a researcher with the centre. He's here to help me ponder about the role LRTs play in materialising Vision 2020, conceptualised by our former Prime Minister Tun Mahathir Mohamad in the early 90s. Earlier, Azif has given us some historical context about how the LRT became our first modern rail line and the process and decision-making behind it. Now we're going to hone in a bit more into the mapping of our LRT's first destinations and stations, at that time known as Star LRT, in relation to the city and its people.
So, if I'm not mistaken, the Star LRT originally had 13 stations and they ran all the way from Ampang up to Sultan Ismail. And the idea was, as in any public transportation system, is to link together far areas, suburban areas, into the heart of the city. And we see this being reflected, I think, in the Kelana Jaya line, where you have the line running through KLCC. Anecdotally, if you go to KLCC during peak hours, you would have to at least wait 12 different carriages to pass over before you can get on one, because there are so many people using the area, because KLCC is really the economic heart of Kuala Lumpur. And I think the idea with public transportation and why certain alignments are built the way they are is that essentially. And you see this also reflected in MRT, where they connect Sungai Buloh all the way to the heart of the city via now the up-and-coming TRX, Kajang Line all the way into passing through Cheras, passing through certain areas which would have been considered back then unreachable, but now are reachable. So Not only do you connect these people to other places they wouldn't have gone naturally, but you also allow people who live along these areas to get a more accessible economic opportunity that they wouldn't have gotten previously. And you think about people who take the Seremban KTM railway. They live in Seremban, drive to the station, but they take the KTM 1 hour and a half into Kuala Lumpur because the pay there is much better. But then they're able to go back to Seremban and enjoy the economic profits, right? They enjoy the financial profits of being able to live in a place which is slightly less expensive than having to live in the city. And I think that's the entire point of why alignments are built the way they are. One, to connect certain areas, but two, to also, in building infrastructure in those specific areas, you raise the land value and social value of an area. And this is what I think was intended with, I mean, it's very obvious with the MRT lah, and why they chose certain places along, all the way out to Sungai Buloh, all the way down to Kajang, where these certain areas are seen to be potential developments to, orang nak kata, naikkan the economic, financial and social health of the area.
Mm. And it's interesting that you use a more recent example to think about, I guess, the satellite cities or satellite towns, satellite areas outside of KL. Sungai Buloh and Kajang these days can be seen as the, I guess, the places where...
Up and coming.
And there are also a lot more residential areas there. So in terms of connecting people to the city, it makes sense in that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when the LRT was first built, Ampang was identified as one of the first few places, right?
Sampas Futuras,
yeah.
Sentul
as well. Yeah, so
even Bukit Jalil.
Yeah, so were these areas the up-and-coming areas back then that was identified as perhaps a good place to start connecting the people there to the city?
So a lot of that science comes behind, I think, with transport planners, city planners and urban planners. I'm not either one of them. But my speculation, or my weight into this debate, I think, would come from the fact that sometimes it's a chicken and egg argument. Can you, as a transport planner, or can you also maybe as a local council planner, city planner, look at an area and decide, does this place have potential for development? And the only reason why I can use the MRT as a good example is because these are areas which we can clearly see there are economic divides. Unfortunately, I was still young in the 1990s, so it's difficult for me to kind of gauge Kelana Jaya, it's difficult for me to gauge Petaling Jaya and how things were. Although, historically, you would say that places like Kelana Jaya, Petaling Jaya were far better off than the outskirts of outer areas such as maybe Shah Alam, for example, even say Kajang, right?
Mm.
So I think the choosing of alignments is something that comes down to, can we increase the value of the place? Is there economic potential for the people living in those constituencies to access the city and hence increase also their quality of living? Because there's a lot of factors that comes into wanting to build alignments. And I happen to live right along one of the MRT lines, right? And the place I live in is, I would say, a low-income community. There's a lot of B40s who stay in my area. It's, I think, been 3 years since the MRT has been there, and I've yet to see economic life emerging there. So sometimes maybe it's not just about building the line there as well. But what I do see, however, is people from outside areas who live in those areas who start using the MRT in order to get to work in the middle of KL, because Cheras has terrible jam. You do not want to drive there. But now that you have the MRT that runs through that place, you're able to save money on private vehicle. Now you're able to get on public transportation, pay 30 ringgit or 100 ringgit a month, and access the city at ease. So I think there are many factors when it comes to thinking of alignments. Sometimes it's a gamble. Sometimes it's an investment. But yeah, it is an investment done by city planners, done by property developers and policymakers.
Mm. And I think to a certain extent, connecting the people from the suburban areas, I think it was also one of the priorities,
yes,
which was why I think the Kelana Jaya line, some stations along those lines were built to immediately benefit the people within that area, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and eventually that line was, when we're talking about the Ampang line or the Putra line,
mm-hmm.
I think it was back then called Putra, right? Now it's called Ampang line. Yeah, and then we see that those lines eventually being extended to Subang as well. Yeah, because at one point Subang...
The Kelana Jaya line has extended to Subang.
Yeah, Kelana Jaya line, yeah, it's being extended all the way to Subang as well. And because Subang, and it's a natural, if you think about it, it's kind of a natural thing.
Because
right?
Subang was, I think, one of the satellites outside Petaling Jaya that was slowly developing. I think in the 90s, it was slowly getting there. You had Sunway, you had Subang Parade, you have commercial centres that were growing.
Mm.
And it was... Well, as a PJ person, I'll contest against whether Subang is really like an up-and-coming place. But I'll be fair to Subang. It was an up-and-coming place. You had Section 15. You had Section 15, which was the trendiest place in town. And now you have the LRT station, which runs right beside Section 15, allowing people from other parts of Petaling Jaya or other parts of KL, even as far flung out as Gombak, to be able to access the trendiness of Section 15.
Yeah.
If it still is lah.
Okay, yeah. What about the building of stations along these spots and lines? What was the people's reaction in general towards the building of these lines? Of course, there were a lot of, you know, massive traffic jams and whatnot.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Were people generally, as much as I think the public can see it as being beneficial, were they as receptive back then, especially during the, you know, the early days of the building of the LRT?
It's hard to say because the literature around there is a bit spotty. But I think based on what reading I managed to do through the media, to reading media, right, media reports around that time, the contention, I think, mainly had to do with how the development then was causing a lot of traffic and congestion around those areas. Because you think about it, you are building the LRT along key and prime areas along the city, areas which people would have generally, I think, back then, been in, driving along in their cars. I mean, we see that happening now even with the MRT and LRT3, right? Where you reroute to other places, it takes you longer to get to work, you get stuck in traffic because four lanes have become two. So from what I read in the media, from those years in the 90s, people were generally concerned with how it was making traffic much worse. But I think on the government side of things, the government, I think, was telling them, giving them the message that it's temporary, we know you're suffering right now, so we're suggesting you to maybe carpool for a while. We're also telling you that once this is completed, believe me, it is worth your time. And to show them that it's worth their time. When the Star LRT was started, I think the fares that were given was 75 cents to 2 ringgit, which is absurdly cheap back then. Not only that, I think there was also talk about offering parking spaces. So park and ride, the concept of park and ride was also existent back then, where people can drive to the closest LRT station, park their car there, go to work, come back, take their car. So I think, all in all, the acceptance level, and I think if you want to see, did the LRT inconvenience people in the beginning? Maybe it did through infrastructure, but are people reaping the rewards now? Certainly. The ridership of public transportation is rising each year. And fine, the MCO may have reduced those numbers for various different reasons, but looking at the numbers, public transportation, people taking railways, were increasing year by year by thousands.
So looking back at history again, when it was finally completed, did the first LRT rail line give the city or the country a certain change in vibe, I guess? Did we suddenly feel like we're there, that we've made it, quote unquote?
I don't know about whether we've made it, but I do know the excitement of seeing the railway line right above your heads, or seeing the train. And I know in the 90s, people were excited to see the LRT. People were getting on the LRT and just going on joyrides, coming on from the Kelana Jaya line, because I live close to the Kelana Jaya line back then, so I'm more familiar with that. There were people who would take the Kelana Jaya line, not get off, by the way, they just get on Kelana Jaya and just go all the way to Gombak and then all the way back. And that is an experience. There is something transportive, to use a quote, there's something transportive about being in the train and seeing the skyline developed from small suburban areas into the big city. We can see skyscrapers going down underground, which must have been quite an experience, because the only time I think one would have been underground back then was either if you would be passing through a tunnel in a car, right? Going underground and then going back above ground, seeing the landscape change. And I think that's quite an experience. And I think the fact is, in media, headlines were saying things like, LRT begins its run, you know, sophisticated entry into the 21st century, or LRT a sure winner with the public, or LRT a solution to the city's transport demand. So there was, I think, a certain sort of excitement in seeing the city landscape change, where once it would have been just skylines, but now you can see a very visual element of thousands of people, hundreds of people moving in a single carriage from point A to point B. And there's something, it evokes some sense of modernity to me. And I feel that every time I see the train.
So the sentiment is still there regardless,
right? I would think so. I think people complain about the LRT or MRT being built, right? And that's an inconvenience, I think, in the sense of now I can't access this place. Or in the case of certain communities where the building of MRT reduces their initial house value, for example, or maybe it obstructs a view that they once had, that, and the thing we call them would be NIMBYs, not in my backyard. And not to say that's negative, but at the same time, it's a question of preservation versus progress, right? And that's a long debate I won't get into. But I believe that, I mean, think about it. Now that the MRT has been completed in Kajang, in Cheras, in Sungai Buloh, you're giving the opportunity for people who otherwise would have needed to take maybe a motorcycle or a car, get stuck in traffic. Now they're able to get an MRT. They're able to see the landscape change as they go along all the way down to get to work into the city. And I think that's an opportunity. That's a positive in my books.
Okay. And I guess to summarize everything, let's go back to the artsy visualization of Wawasan 2020 and let's reflect on the city in its current state, right? With the LRT lines, MRT lines, and also the various buildings that we have, skyscrapers. Have we reached the kind of vision that we sort of like envisioned back then?
With exception to the flying car, I think we have. I mean, if you look at all those old drawings from the 90s, how the school kids imagine Wawasan 2020, we have all those elements now. We have skyscrapers, and maybe you can criticize whether or not we need that many skyscrapers and whether it destroys the identity of what the city should be. That's a separate conversation. But we have skyscrapers nonetheless. We have satellite communications. We have satellites up in space that connect us to a much wider network of communications and entertainment. And we have the LRT, which is interesting because I think what cropped up towards the middle of last year in 2019 was that people started sharing a few panels of this one magazine called Majalah Relax, which was published in 1999. And during that time, if you look at the pictures, it shows kind of a very futuristic. It's something you see out of the Jetsons or in any sort of futuristic movie where the cars are hovering, people are wearing weird little spacesuits, or people are in, or Mars is no longer a plane, it's like a huge spaceship. Interesting. But what is constant, what seems to be not out of place then and even now, is how the trains looked. The trains look exactly the same like it does now, where there are people going into it. It looks like it's in a sensible, on the ground, elevated position. So it's interesting, you know, when you think about how that was rendered in 1999, people saw trains the way it did, and how, if you look at how the MRT is built now, how LRT is now, it's the same. So yeah, I would say I think apart from a few technological obstacles like flying cars or maybe the ease of IoT and all those things, I think we've come to the point where I think in terms of transportation, we can be better, but we've certainly reached a point where we can say we've achieved that.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and this week, Azif Azuddin, a researcher with Think Tank, the centre, joined me to help contextualise the history of the LRTs in relation to the visualisation of the city in Vision 2020, which usually included elevated railways by children in the 90s. That's all we have for this Merdeka episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app, which you can find via Google Play and the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Sanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.